Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. And now I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to Talking Shit, where we are talking all sorts of shit. Shit's Creek, that is. I'm Jess Sterling, and today we are talking about the season 2 finale of Shit's Creek called Happy Anniversary. And of course, I'm not alone. As always, I'm joined by someone who has a headshot that got him a 2-episode arc on Dateline, Stuart. Stuart, how are
you? Sadly did not get me laid a lot, though.
And today we are joined by a very special guest making her first appearance on Talking Shit, someone who always raises the roof to Precious Love, Grace Leader. Grace, how are you?
Oh, you have no idea how much I've listened to Precious Love. So many times. What a great episode. I'm very excited to be here. Thanks for having me on Talking Shit.
Of course. Thank you for being here, Grace. Can you give us a little bit, because it is your first time on the podcast, can you give us a little bit of your history with the show Schitt's Creek as a fellow Canadian?
Yeah. So Schitt's Creek came out and there was a big push in Canada for people to watch the show. It was a CBC show. So it was a big push to watch it. And I got extremely turned off by the title of the show, Schitt's Creek. I did not like the title of the show. I didn't think it was going to be my sense of humor. I can be very silly, but in a comedy, I'm normally looking for something a little more grounded. And eventually, I had heard the groundswell of the show. And so I believe it's around this time. This episode had come out, but I did not watch it. I then binged, I think, the first like 2.5 seasons that were out. And boy, this show just sucks you in. I think that's where a lot of like where people are going to be talking about this episode. I've already seen some of the feedback that it's like, yep, this is the moment that it's not the moment the show gets good. The show is already good. Like it is just a moment that makes you fall in love with the show as one of the best things you're watching on television. And so I love it. I'm very proud of this show because Canadians get very weird about things that become successful, not just in Canada, but especially when they break out of Canadian pop culture, because our culture is so consumed by American content. There are literally laws, and everybody who's ever listened to me on a podcast is going to be like, I know you told the story all the time, but it's especially relevant to this one, which is that Canada has laws to make sure we are not subsumed by American culture. The percentage of songs that play on the radio have to be Canadian.
Are you required by law to always point out when someone is Canadian, like a celebrity is Canadian? Because I feel like you and your friend Melissa both follow that law. Like, you're never going to get arrested for not shouting.
You know what? The only reason it's not a law because they know Canadians will just do it anyway.
Because they're just
Yeah. Well, I fit into a bunch of these buckets of things where like it's like I do have to tell you if that person fits into the same bucket as me. And it is just because our culture is mostly Americanized. And so then when a Canadian becomes famous, we have to be like, do you know that person's actually, they're not actually American, they're Canadian. Being Canadian, living with type 1 diabetes, and being a trans person are all things I'm going to tell you about a person if they fit into one of those buckets. And God forbid if they have multiple of them.
So. Mm-hmm. The Venn diagrams converge.
That's right.
Incredible. Well, we're so happy to have you here. And Stuart, just before we dive into like a little bit more of a recap of the episode, I want to get your thoughts on this episode, because obviously we're in a very unique situation in which you weren't binging this show and you're watching it with very like a very keen eye to podcast about it. You already, I know, love the show. So how did you feel about this being a lot of people's kind of turning point? This is what they cite as, this is the moment I was fully invested in the show and its characters.
Certainly justified. I think we've been waiting this entire time for the episode where you know what's coming. You know that they're going to eventually maybe not fall in love, but like at least appreciate Schitt's Creek for what it is and appreciate the people and to stand up for it. And this has been something that has been a 2-season kind of tease because you just know it's gonna happen. You want it to happen. And so to see it happen is just heartwarming. And for it to have come from Johnny as well, as like after we've been so down on Johnny for so long, it was it just rocket shipped him like up into my appreciations. I was like, oh buddy, welcome to the game, like we're all here now, it's great. Yeah, it was really lovely. I'm not surprised that this is everyone's kind of like standout episode as the one that kind of turns the tide almost in terms of the quality shift, and I think the appreciation shift, and it's just lovely. I can't gush about this episode more.
All right, well, let's,
it's funny just because it's almost a it's almost it's a found family story but with your their actual family.
Yeah, and we'll get into it. The very much the ending of the episode is like the first time we ever hear Moira especially saying she loves her kids. And like, it's a big deal. This is not something that they usually say to one another. But yeah, let's get into all of that. Let me recap, do a little recap at the top of what happened this episode. It's time to say congrats on your ongoing love for one another to Johnny and Moira. It's their anniversary, and after a last-minute reservation, Johnny gets them a table at Elmdale's finest eatery. It's there that they bump into some friends from their old lives, Don and Bev Taylor. And I'm sorry, Bev is the most like rich person name I've ever heard in my life. Bev. Don and Bev. The dinner becomes awkward when Roland and Jocelyn show up and their two worlds collide. After Don and Bev will not stop trash talking Schitt's Creek, which they call Schittsville, Johnny gives them a piece of his mind, not just standing up for their town, but also standing up for Jocelyn and Roland and condemning Don and Bev for never basically cutting off all communication with the Roses once they lost their money. It is the freaking best. It's the best. Meanwhile, Alexis learns from Ted that Mudd is hosting a party at his barn, and she wasn't invited, but Ted was, which is a huge question mark that we're going to have to talk about. Alexis decides to attend this party looking like a literal angel sent from heaven. She meets Mudd's new girlfriend, Tennessee, and Ted gives her a pep talk about how difficult it was for him to get over her. David and Stevie are competing to see who can pick up woodworker Jake, with David getting to neck him in the parking lot. So that's fun. And the episode ends with the Roses doing a family dance in the barn to Precious Love, in which Johnny and Moira tell the kids how much they love them. And of course, it is the sweetest thing of all time ever, full stop. I'm not willing to make any exceptions on that. And that was our finale. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. It was so lovely. I've gushed about it already. Grace, it's your turn. Go.
I mean, it is just the best. I mean, it is so sweet. I think there's a what I found interesting about the episode. I did not go back and rewatch, unfortunately. I'm so sorry. The rest of the season. So I was just sort of like jumping back into this show. And what I think is interesting, this show is like, I just kind of forget how slow they roll into a lot of the things that are happening. Obviously, this is like not sort of the modern episode count of a sitcom. Like, I know, Jess, mm-hmm. you're doing Abbott Elementary, watching some episodes. I've been watching that, and although they get a little bit like hamstrung because of like writer strike and the first season is shortened, but like they have a 22 episode season, so like almost double what this is. And I just was like reminded that when we jump into this, like we're like I love how like not a lot of stuff is actually resolved in this episode, but it is such a fantastic ending to a season in terms of like the thing that is kind of resolved here that you could say is basically like the Roses sort of like having officially fallen in love with Schitt's Creek. And it's so beautiful and precious, and I mean precious, it's precious love. but it is a delight. It's so sweet. It's lovely. It's heartwarming. I mean, this is in the peak of sort of like this and Ted Lasso, and people are being like, this is the type of television we need right now, which is shows that have like are just sort of like, you know, unconditional love. And this is a pretty epic moment for that in the show.
Yeah, Stuart, I think I remember hearing a lot of people say they found Schitt's Creek during COVID. I don't think that's necessarily surprising, given to Grace's point. Like, it is, it's a feel-good show. And while we're not really necessarily moving the ball forward on a ton of plot in this episode, and there's even some more like throwaway storylines, like the David and Stevie storyline is kind of like, who cares, whatever, you know, I'm not really focused on that. This episode is fully worth it the moment Johnny starts speaking up at that dinner table. From that point on, the episode does not miss the mark. It's like everything we've been shouting about, right? Like we've been saying, gosh, Roland and Jocelyn really do help the Roses out constantly. It's just so nice to hear Johnny finally kind of say that and appreciate it when it's been going on for two full seasons.
Yeah, to get that acknowledgement for all the niceties that have come is really lovely. A little late, I would say. It would be nice to, you know, thank people for things when they happen. But as long as it comes, I mean, I guess that's good. But I think with the structure of the episodes, I've kind of always favored when it comes to the rankings of them. It's like we've had really plot heavy episodes. Well, I say heavy, but like plot centric episodes or kind of knee slapper episodes of like really kind of high comedy. Whereas I think this one introduces, I think, is going to be like the third in this Venn diagram of sweet episodes. And I don't necessarily need plot. I don't necessarily need comedy if it has that sweetness. As long as it's got one of those three in abundance, I'm going to be happy. If it's got a blend of all three, delightful. And I think this one is the first to really kind of lean into the kind of sweetness of everything, because it's a great way of resolving a lot of the lingering emotion that is kind of in the air here. Because last time we had the whole potential get out of Schitt's Creek. They were going to get the money from that awful guy, and then they thought they were going to lose it all, and David left and stuff, and so everything was just a bit harsh and horrible. Whereas this one was just them settling in, embracing everything, and like we've got now Alexis working a job with Ted, we've got David who has like got a load of money for Wendy and has a bit of money like himself, a load of money considering their whole situation. Moira's now on the town council. Johnny's still working out Bob's garage, but less said about that, the better. So we do have them kind of really getting their kind of like feet into the town and settling in. And so it's nice to have that acknowledged.
Yeah, I would agree, Grace, especially because with Moira becoming the default option for town council, that's like a multi-year position. So it felt like it was almost overdue for the Roses to be invested in Schitt's Creek, because Moira's going to be on the town freaking council for this town. Like, what says more invested than getting involved in your local politics of the town? You know, like it feels like it's been a long time coming, but not so overdue that you're getting frustrated, but like just kind of hitting the mark of like, we've been kind of waiting for them to hit this point.
Well, I agree. I think one of the things the show does really well is, I mean, I know you talked about like, this is like a very sweet episode, and it feels like I'm about to put words in your mouth, and I promise I'm not, which is that I think this episode is also actually just very funny. There is some very funny lines in the episode. It also, I think this episode is basically a pretty classic sitcom trope of like, oh, you said you would do this one thing, but actually you end up going for dinner and you run into the people who you said you wouldn't do. And the way they tie that into, so first of all, I think the whole premise of like, there's like this premise of Roland being like, yeah, we're going to take you out. I guess he doesn't say we're taking you out for dinner. It's just that you get to go to dinner, I guess, is what you get when you join the
club. Yeah.
And this coupon that essentially is going to give them one free entree. I think that all is like pretty funny. And what I think is great about the show too is that you do over type, like Roland is the type of person who like, I would not choose to hang out with Roland, but he does do a nice things over, and they're sort of like sort of forced into hanging out with him, that then you eventually realize like just how actually sweet they are and how nice they are. Recently I went to a live recording of a podcast, and they were asked what their favorite thing about being in Toronto was, and all of them said like sort of were like, I think it is just the way in which people help each other. And one of the podcasters was talking about how like literally their example of that was like someone in front of them was using one of those like step garbage bins, and they threw something out, and then they saw that this person was coming, and they like basically turned back around to like open the step garbage thing for them. And they're like, that's so sweet. And so like almost you don't need to step. I can step on the garbage bin, but like, it's so sweet. It's so reflective. And there is this thing that like one of the things that Johnny points out is like, they lend us their truck when we need a truck, you know? Mm. And it's like, I just think that this is such a sweet story. And it is very classic sitcom-y and tropey, but it's because it has so much heart in it and everything that's built up to this point where Johnny and Moira are actually going to I think in another show, this scene is excruciatingly much longer, in which like Johnny and Moira are almost being more ruthless to Roland and Jocelyn. They're being more like trying to put up the front of like, that they don't live in Schitt's Creek and they don't live in a motel. Yeah. And it's not, it's actually pretty, there's the kind of the one joke about where they live, and it's a bungalow. Ranch style bungalow with 10 bedrooms, and they have the staff, Stevie, Roland says he's the only staff member. Like, you get that bit, but that's not entirely like, I think in a way that like a lot of other sitcoms do. And so what I think in this particular storyline is just like how sweet it actually is and how much heart and the kindness there is in this storyline that's like wrapped up in a very tropey storyline.
Yeah, because I think with the tropey element and things, they kind of lean into it a little bit with the whole booking element. But then they also move away from it almost a little bit, what with Johnny actually remembering the anniversary and going to the kids and like telling them to like wish their mother a happy anniversary. It's like, ordinarily, I think most would be like, oh, the dumbass husband that's forgotten the anniversary, and it'd be this whole thing that would go through. So it's funny how they play, I think, with tropes. Like, they lean into them when needed at sometimes, but then they also pull away from it sometimes as well. And I think in not kind of, because I think people are tropes. I mean, that's why tropes are a thing, right? But I think always relying on them is lazy. And I think the way in which the show kind of dabbles in them now and then kind of just elevates the writing whole thing. Mm. The beginning as well, with the whole Johnny going to the kids. I mean, surely, do you have to wish your parents a happy anniversary? Like, it's polite to do.
I was going to ask this because I have always been of the mindset of like, the only people that owe anniversary gifts to each other are the people that are married or like whatever anniversary you're, you know, celebrating. Those are the people that owe each other gifts. No one else is expected to give you anything. Like, yes, a happy anniversary is nice, but I don't think it's necessarily, you know, required. And I love that Moira and the kids have the same exact mindset of this, where she's like, oh, you sound like the incestuous Bloomfields, like, stop, you're being too lovey-dovey. And it's very, comes full circle at the end when she tells her kids she loves them, you know, it's a very full circle moment. But no, I don't know, Grace, I'm of the opinion that like, the only people that owe anything to anyone are the people that are involved in the anniversary.
Okay, well, this is great news, because I've actually been a little stressed about this, actually. Not stressed, but like, you know, when you're like, oh, God,
is your parents' anniversary coming up or something?
I will say it did just come up. And I will say we did do something, but it was because it was their 40th wedding anniversary.
Big ones, I feel like, sure, fine, whatever.
So we did throw a little bit of a shindig. But you know what? I ordered online from this place that was highly recommended. It was supposed to be a very fancy charcuterie board, and I got the biggest one, and then I got it in person, and it was so tiny, and I was so mad. Everyone was making fun of me because it was like, you overhyped the charcuterie board and overpaid for charcuterie board. And I tell you, I was so mad that it was so tiny. We hardly ate half of it. We didn't even eat it. So I mean, maybe the perfectly sized charcuterie board, because then we had extra charcuterie. We did do something for my parents this year, but it was my brother's anniversary a little while ago, like in August. And I think midway through the day, I was like, oh, should I message him?
See, that, in my opinion, that matters even less, because your parents birthed you, but like, your sibling, like, so what? They chose to get married. Like, good for them. You know, why is it on me to like be like celebrating their love? You know, well, you celebrate your love. I don't need to be involved in that. Well, it's kind of gross if I'm involved in that.
I can't believe I called them and sang them Precious Love over the phone, but that's fine. you know what I often do? My mom is very good about this sort of stuff. My mom made a nice Facebook post, and I posted underneath it.
Get that partial credit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mom's the person who has all these dates like in her calendar and somehow knows it's this person's anniversary and this person's birth. It's like I have my immediate family and my husband's immediate family, and I'm not required to know anybody else's. You know, this is it. That's it. Nothing more.
Yeah.
The Bloomfield line is pretty funny because that's entirely fiction. This is just like world building in the show. The Bloomfields, I believe they're previously mentioned in the lawyers firm Rose Bloomfield and Glickman.
Yes.
And then in this episode, it's just that they go skinny. So I was like searching like the incestuous Bloomfield. So maybe shouldn't have done. I'm like, I should have been in incognito mode. but I did search that, and all the things come up that it's a Schitt's Creek invention. So I very much like that.
That's incestuous Bloomfield.
But it doesn't it sound like a
it does.
Like folklore, like, oh, the incestuous, you know, like, you know, the incestuous.
Sounds like the Rockefellers, field. But like the Rockefellers of Canada are the Bloomfields.
Yeah,
Bloomfields, and they're incestuous. Yeah. And yeah, to go back to your point too about the tropiness of it all, and kind of the show then takes a different tone because these people, freaking Bev and Don, are like so rude about the restaurant. They're complaining, oh, this wine is undrinkable and this olive tamponade or whatever the hell. I don't even know what a tamponade is. That's how I know it's fancy.
Furious.
And yeah, she's just like rude.
Yeah. The for one thing, like, Schitt's Creek as a name is funny. Grant them that to make a joke about it, but then they start really slagging it off, which is not nice. But the thing that really angered me was Justin about to like talk really good. Up the olive tapenade, and then they go, oh, it's too salty, and then she immediately just puts it down and goes, oh, maybe you're right, it's too salty. And I'm like, Justin, don't you dare let these rich people tell you how to like kind of enjoy things.
And I think it's like that is one step. It's like every little thing. It's like you're adding more and more and more weight and pressure to this situation. And I think what put me over the edge was Bev when it's like, oh, what do you do, Roland? And Bev says, oh, something in agriculture by the looks of it, which is so rude to basically call him out and say, like, you look like you just walked off a farm. Like, it's like so brutal. And when they say like, oh, mayor of a town, oh, I hope not Schittsville. And it's just like they're going on and on and on. And I feel like that just pushes Johnny over the edge. Even Moira is like willing to just overlook it. She's like, oh, we're over it. Don't worry. And that's when Johnny goes on this like rant, basically saying, you know, all you've done, I'm sitting at a half decent restaurant with my wife and our friends, and all you've done is complain about the food and pretend that you didn't even leave us high and dry when we lost everything. And I especially love the line, you wrote us off, Don, not a phone call, not an email, not a nickel. Like, that couldn't tell you more about what sort of friends these people are. And then you're comparing them with literally the other two people at the table that have given you everything, a place to live, a truck when you need it, friendship. Like, they've given you everything, and they have much, much less than Don and Bev have.
I have a couple things here because I love this scene. And again, the way I think that it is not standard trope material is that I do think, and a lot of times it would be Roland or Jocelyn who would stand up, and then Johnny would go and apologize to Roland, and then he would learn his lesson that way. But actually the show decides Johnny will be the one here to take a stand and defend the town and his friends. And this is a town that they bought because it did have a silly name. Like, that's the whole reason they bought this place. So, you know, and there's this joke about like, and I think this is actually like, I wonder if this is kind of like the writers, you know, like writing about the show, which is that he's like, well, don't really go for the low hanging fruit, you know? And I think that's very poignant in the scene because my initial instinct of like not wanting to jump on board with watching Schitt's Creek was because it seemed a little like hokey and it seemed like low hanging fruit. And the show is so much more than that. And I think in this scene, what I actually love just about the line, you didn't like one where he ends it with a nickel. What I love is that I think that actually shows the hint of Johnny's flaws. Actually, I think this is really well written in the way that what Johnny, the like stamp of the thing that he puts on the end of his, like, you didn't give us this thing, like, you didn't do this, which is like a call, whatever, or a nickel, which is money. the thing that like he knows he can sort of like, you know, stab him in the gut with is like, you're rich and you didn't give us any money. And I know he's saying like, you didn't even give us a nickel. You could have given us a nickel. But I think this is really, really, really well written in the sense that I feel like, again, most that you would think that like the hammer on this insult is actually that like, you didn't even call me. You didn't even do anything to pretend like you cared about me. But I actually feel like the one that Johnny uses is money, because that's the world that they were from and that they are from. And so I think it's very brilliant because I think that there's so much genuineness in this thing, and he's sticking up for Jocelyn and Roland and defending Schitt's Creek and all of this thing. But also there is this slight hint of like, that's Johnny. You know, that's who Johnny is. Mm-hmm. He's going to hammer the point home with actually that you have money that you didn't give us. I think it's very funny.
Yeah, I think a big part of it too is when you have super duper rich friends, like is giving away $5,000 going to mean anything to Don and Bev? Probably not, but it'll mean a lot to people who just lost everything. So I think it's especially brutal that these people that you've casually bumped into after however long it's been, and they didn't offer you anything, not sympathies and certainly not money. And yeah, like Stuart, I don't think, sure, like Roland and Jocelyn, you know, I think it's Johnny says like they've offered what little they have, like they've been so generous with what little they
that
have.
Also which is feels a thing. Little insulting, yeah.
And it's very, I mean, it's a backhanded compliment for sure to be like, oh, yeah, they're super generous and they have almost nothing because they're super poor. Look at them, you know. It just like kind of gives that vibe. And yeah, I agree. It is a little bit like, but. The point is well made still.
It's perfect, and Johnny. It's well written. That's Johnny. It's great.
Yeah.
I think it's what it is. It's like it is definitely like Johnny kind of having that kind of like flaw manifest. But I think it's also talking in plain terms to these people. Like the thing about not calling or emailing, that is more effort than I think giving $5,000 away to these people. Like $5,000 would be an easy thing to do. You wire it, you don't talk to anyone, it's less time effort. Like I think there's this whole thing of like when you get so rich, the only resource that you really lack is time, and that's where all your money goes, is buying time, because that's why people buy staff to do things for them. It's because that's the only thing that they can't really buy more of, so they buy assistance with it and stuff like that. So I think it's Johnny making that point, but then I think it also does come from that tinge of, you could have just given us some money. You could have helped us. Like, why didn't you do that kind of thing? And I think to point out to the Taylors, the fact that the Roland and Jocelyn have given so much despite having little, I don't think there's a way in which you can really articulate it without being a little, kind of a little offensive, because how do you really make this point that these people had less and gave so much more despite being relative strangers? Like, how do you big up that gesture of kindness without framing it in such a way? Maybe you could have worded it a bit more delicately, but I think it's worth it because he's paying such a massive backhanded compliment in the way in which he does it, which I think is kind of necessary. And there's just some lovely moments, like when you see that when they ask about Roland working in agriculture, and then Jocelyn like pipes up and goes, actually, he's the mayor of our town. And the way she says it, like she's filled with pride that he is the mayor of their town. He feels that as well. And he looks to Jocelyn and he's like there's this whole look of like, thanks for sticking up for me kind of thing. Like, and there was a kind of really lovely moment there. I think it's all about substance beneath all the money and things, and then once that's torn down, you see this kind of like genuine love that can be conveyed. Roland's annoying, but there is the sweetness that comes with it, and I think you've got to speak about that in plain terms with these people.
And I do think we get a glimpse of what the Roses may have been like prior to losing everything. They were probably very similar to the Taylors. You have to imagine that they had many dinners with this couple in which all they did was complain about the food and, oh, this wine isn't fancy enough. You know, like you have to imagine they were super uppity about that sort of thing. And so to see kind of the drastic shift in their mentality, having lost everything, and us thinking that like, this is a really nice dinner. Like, we don't often get this because we're usually eating at the cafe, or, you know, making tea in our tiny motel room. Like, this is a nice night out. And I think they're kind of getting a glimpse into, like, wow, were we like this? Like, is this who we were prior to coming to Schitt's Creek? It definitely just feels like such a drastic, and we talk about, like, you know, incremental growth with these characters over these two seasons. And this just felt like 10 steps forward for these characters, most, you know, very specifically Johnny. It just feels like such a big leap forward for them. And then it's, you think that's going to be it, and then it's not. We have the moment at the barn as well. That's like even more of a leap forward for the whole family. And I just think it's like, it's so important not to have just have this scene, but to have the scene and have Johnny be the one saying it, I think just made me so happy as like kind of the patriarch of the family. And Grace, he's always the one who wants to help. I don't know that he always necessarily does the best job at helping or like knows how to help his family. But sticking up for his friends and his wife, like in this moment, I just absolutely adored. And like, Johnny is the best here. This is the best version of Johnny so far.
I know. And it's funny because this is a show made by, you know, Dan and Eugene Levy. And Eugene Levy is a, you know, Canadian icon, classic. But I think he gets a little bit like, I think almost anybody who's going to rank, you know, the Roses is just, no offense, putting Johnny last.
Except my husband. I will have to say that because he'd be upset if I didn't. He loves Johnny.
Who does he put last, though? See?
If I had to guess, he probably would put like Alexis or Moira last. I think he really likes Dave as well. Whoa. I mean, yeah, hot spicy take. No. I just know he likes Johnny.
No, but Eugene Levy, I mean, this is a big, Eugene Levy also just appeared in the season premiere of Only Murders in the Building. He's going to be in season 4. Yes. Big week. It's a big week for Schitt's Creek. I mean, Only Murders with Eugene Levy. Beetlejuice is coming. I don't know if you two are going to stop down to do a Beetlejuice beat, but that could be.
I've never even seen the original Beetlejuice.
Oh, Stuart, you've seen the original Beetlejuice?
Same.
Oh my God. Were you worried about saying his name?
Yeah,
it terrified me. It looked like a scary movie when I was a kid, so I never wanted to watch it.
I didn't tell you I would do this, and I'm not getting permission for you, but you know, if the audience, you know, demands, you know, you take some detours from Schitt's Creek along the way, I feel like a good place to start is you watch
Beetlejuice is
coming, so you know, it could be a fun time to talk Catherine O'Hara at her best. I mean, Catherine O'Hara also, I think that the show gets her to a place where I think if you knew her and watched her, you like, yes, she's amazing, but I think she gets some discredit for, like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, the mom from Home Alone, like, you know, but like this show, now I think Moira, puts her back, yeah, in a place where it's like, we love and appreciate Catherine O'Hara. I think it does very similar things for Eugene Levy. I think he's a very important part of like the thing. I think it like, it doesn't really, I mean, I know the show is like made by Eugene and Dan, but like, I don't think it's so much less successful if you don't have Johnny Rose in the mix. This is a really great Johnny episode. And I mean, the biggest episode this first, probably for Roland, that coupon was going to expire in 3 weeks. So
good for him.
Yeah, you gotta use it or lose it. Can I tell you, I have not told this story on a podcast, I don't think, but my brother, it's been stuck in his memory, which is Canada is obsessed with point system. We're the most points obsessed country in the world. We have more points. I do not go to places where I do not get points. So if I'm going to get gas, I go to the place where I get points. If I go grocery shopping, I go to the place where I get points. If I go to the pharmacy I use, I go to get points. I also get points for buying books at my local bookstore. And recently I went in and I was buying some books and he said, oh, you have like $50 in points. Do you want to use them? I said, ah, no, I don't think I'll use them today. And he goes, what are you waiting for?
Like,
you know what? I don't know. But I'm not going to use them today, but I then went back the next time and used my points because what are you waiting for? And it's now my brother, every time they're like, you want to redeem your points? He's like, what are you waiting for?
What are we waiting for?
Redeems his points.
Yeah. Anyway,
we're points obsessed country. So.
That's hilarious and awesome. Mm-hmm. I love getting points for things. Okay. Let's talk about Stevie and David. They have like, you know, by comparison, a very unimportant storyline, but it is pretty funny. I love looking at this yearbook photo of Stevie. Was it most likely to get the guy or something?
Yeah.
That's classic. Like they put that in a yearbook back then. It's like, yeah.
Yep. Of course they did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, best eyes.
Were either of you in your yearbook? Has anything?
I was never a superlative. No. Did they have superlatives in the UK, Stuart?
No, we had like nicknames.
This
and,
is a requirement
like,
of the podcast.
Throwing in. But yeah, no, sadly not.
Okay, so I did.
Go ahead.
I know I was just going to update. I did ask my husband, can you rank the roses in Schitt's Creek? And he goes, I can't.
That's a fair answer.
That's a very fair answer. I know Johnny would be the top, but I think the rest are just blah. Yeah.
I was named most likely to be prime minister. And can I tell you, I'm revealing so much today. In the photo, they used the photo of what internally was probably the most gender euphoric day of my entire high school, because I was asked for a group of four other cis women to be Baby Spice and the Spice Girls. And I don't know why they asked me, and I still know that it doesn't, like, I didn't, I don't know, but I was. And then that's the picture they used. So it's actually almost gender accurate.
That's incredible.
Of me as future Prime Minister of Canada. So
there you go. No. My husband also followed up with, I'd have to rig it to give Johnny more respect. He's obviously not given the content the others are. And I think it's just mean to put him last. That's what he said.
Sure.
So, yeah. So then David and Stevie kind of had this competition of like, okay, we're going to pick up a guy at this barn party that Mutt's throwing. And David just by happenstance meets this guy, Jake, while he's like going to get ice that was like well water ice or something. And not great.
I mean, I don't want to spoil like later on in the pod, but like that's surely LVP territory. Well water for ice? Like that's grim, right?
Yeah, it's
like
bad.
I was willing to be like give Mutt some points. So I don't know. I mean, I was willing to give Mutt's points because Mutt has seemingly returned from the dead, like having been gone for so long and now is back. Yeah. But now he's doing like well water and ice. Maybe he was like ill. Well, I think that would make sense.
The problem is that actually in rural Ontario, where I assume I always presume this is where Schitt's Creek takes place, it's just not uncommon that your water comes from a well. So I grew up with well water.
I don't understand this.
It's just not like you're going and like digging up. You're not like going to the
this
well.
This isn't like a
day,
leftovers like, well. This is like a in the ground that your house is like tapped into or whatever.
Well, I mean, I guess the idea is maybe like Mutt, but the idea might be that Mutt also might have that type of well.
Maybe he got a bucket. Maybe.
Yeah, I do think like I think that that's kind of like the joke, I think. Maybe I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I would hope so, because it smells fishy. Like, I'm hoping that tap water doesn't smell fishy for you all.
No, it doesn't. Sulfur water, sure, smells eggy.
I'll say this storyline for me. This one, I do like it. There's the button on it. I really love. Like, I love where we get to by the end of the episode. The actual like getting there, I think it's probably the weakest. Like, just in terms of like the story that it is. Other than it's a kind of fun that like it's like a gay guy and David. I don't know if he says it explicitly, but he's probably more pan than.
Yeah. Oh, he said, yeah, here. he said
it's
he's
the pansexual, wine bottle stuff. So yeah, pan. You know,
but that comes back up, Grace, because he asks like, oh, do you like red wine or white? And he says, oh, I'm a beer guy.
He's like, that's not helpful at all. I think it's funny, but also I'm like, it is. There's a line that David says as well that I was like, oh, I don't think that's like the you know, and not everything in the show can be the funniest thing you've ever heard, right? So it's like, but there's one thing he says when like Stevie walks away or someone walks away and he does this thing, and I was like, you know, not your best work. I definitely think this is like the weakest part of this episode, but it's filled with so much greatness that it's fine. It can be in here. It's all right. Yeah.
It feels weirdly shoehorned in, I think. I got the same kind of like jarring sense from it, is that it wasn't the best written. And I think that it was like, it's a nice, I think, concept. I mean, the idea of them all at a party and the shenanigans kind of happening is kind of perfect. And I feel like this was maybe phoned in a little bit. It was like, oh, we need David and Stevie to be doing something. They could be doing this. That's kind of amusing. It might kind of like play reference to some previous stuff that we've got going on. But again, just a little clunky, not the kind of best. But again, like I kind of like some of the stuff that came out of it. I liked the joke about like kind of the wine, like they were trying to bring it up and being kind of very like, oh, I'm so wise, and it just getting thrown away because Jake just didn't take the bait, which I thought was really good. Yeah. But aside from that,
he doesn't, he wouldn't know the reference.
No,
so
he
wouldn't
doesn't
be helpful
get the reference.
Even
yeah.
an actual
yeah. I yeah. think the only so, the, you know, the main fine, thing this fine. The main thing the storyline has going for it is I do think there are quite a few funny lines. I really love the Dateline line of, you know, he got a 2-episode arc in Dateline. And I also really love the very end, the tail end of it, where David is trying to tell Stevie and Twyla that him and Jake kissed, and they're so high because they got high from some townies. They didn't want to offend them because they're doing so well in life.
Oh, and then this is a great line. Is like, you don't want to burn. Is this the burn the bridge? Funny.
Yes. We didn't want to burn the bridge. Actually, those boys did burn a bridge last summer. It's so funny. And the line of, oh, we just necked out behind the barn. And she's like, what makes you think that? He's like, because we put our mouths together out behind the barn. Like, there are certain things that are really funny. You know, Stevie's, oh, I kissed him too. But yeah, it does feel like they're just like, okay, what are we going to do with them this episode? Well, they do have this prior kind of competitive streak when it comes to dating. So they're all going to be at Mutt's party anyway. Let's just throw that together. And it's fine. Again, I agree. I think it's the weakest of all three storylines this episode. But it's not like offensively bad or anything. It's just like, it's fine. It's serviceable.
The button on it is great too. I do think like when he's like, oh, we kissed, and then Stevie's like, well, we kissed too. And he's like, when would you even have time to do that? She's like, I don't know. And she walks away. And like just the seating, and she's, I think, obviously lying, right? She's just lying. Right? Is that the read we get?
The vibe I got from it.
Yeah, she's high. She's like, messing with David. Lying.
Yeah, she's constantly messing with David, right?
And I think that that's hilarious. Like, it's very funny to be like, you had a win, but actually, I'm just going to mess and say I also kissed him, and you actually can't tell me whether I, you know, proved it wrong.
Because David is extremely competitive, so it's going to get under his skin, obviously. Yeah.
And again, like, yeah, him being competitive, that plays back to the whole, like, board games of it all. Yes. It plays into,
it's
like,
in
his
character.
Entire dynamic with Stevie. What really made me laugh as well is after he and Jake kissed, and then Jake kind of, like, just wanders off. And then David's weird run that he does back, which is kind of like that low run that people do when they don't want to be seen to be running, but they do run. And I was like, that's the run of someone who has to immediately declare a win or gain a point. I can see the point system. Yes. It's like, I need to get points.
Can I just say, sorry, quickly. David runs back in, and he's in this episode. You don't really see much of his outfit when he's in the bar, other than basically the same as running back, and he's wearing sort of like that, like, black skirt he wears a lot. Mm-hmm. I just want to say that the other thing that Schitt's Creek I thought was like really important for is just like David on television in terms of the type of character that you don't get to see. And for me, as somebody being, one of the things about being trans, and this would have been actually pretty close probably to when I came out, I do think there's something to not go notice is like, obviously want to see trans people on television, but I do think there's something about a cis queer guy being pretty like gender non-conforming in the type of clothes he wears, how important that can be to feel comfortable. Because like part of, for me, what I needed sometimes was like, I know I'm going to go out and I'm not going to pass as being trans, as being like a trans woman. But if people just see me as like basically David Rose, like that, my safety level, it feels, I'm more safe to do that when you have David Rose on your television than when you don't. And that seems like incredibly, probably like overinflating maybe the importance of Schitt's Creek, but I do think it's true of like seeing
it's representation.
And it's like, it for me, knowing like in the phases of my like transition of being like, I don't think I'm going to pass. And so, but if people don't clock me as trans and my life is in danger, maybe they'll be okay with like, you know, it's like, you just, you're being generous, and it just is really important, I think. And so I just want to, as I, my first time here on Talking Shit, I do just want to talk about how important I think that representation is in the show.
The other funny thing about, like, because they're talking about you know, oh, we just got high with some local townies, and then the next minute when the roses come in, they go, ooh, smells like grass. Just really did just crack me up. But before we talk about that very last scene, we have to talk about Alexis and her complicated feelings about Mutt moving on with Tennessee. And okay, and I know I hate Mutt, and this is a big, you know, I said what I said. I still fully dislike Mutt. I also think it's kind of a jerk move. I mean, Alexis shows up. That's weird. That's a weird thing to do. This is your ex's barn party, but okay, Alexis, fine. I don't think he had to, she goes, oh, you're growing your beard back. He did not have to say, oh, well, she likes it. He didn't have to say that.
Your Mutt impression is getting so good.
Thank you. I've been practicing. I was just so annoyed with him. I'm like, don't rub it in. She's obviously taking this really hard. Like, you can, you know her. Like, you can, it's all, all over her face that she's like upset.
Yeah. She, the moment she you lost see her attending, you know that like he still lives in her head a little bit rent free. And so you don't need to kind of like rub that in. You've got the win if it is about winning and losing in a situation. But can we talk about Alexis? She does a little bit of an immature thing by turning up. Because maybe it would be best for her to just not do the stuff. But also to turn up and to not really make a scene, but just to talk them up. And to calmly kind of just almost like take stock of the whole situation. And I think maybe see that he's kind of moved on and then process her feelings is incredibly like emotionally mature for Alexis, considering I don't think this would have happened a couple of seasons ago. So the growth here is something to really be acknowledged. And the conversation between her and Ted as well.
It's so sweet. Oh, I love it so much.
The pair of them.
Yeah, it's so sad, Grace, when you hear that she asks, like, how did you do it, right? Like, she needs advice on, like, how do I get over Mutt like you got over me? And his explanation of, well, I started by drinking all the four of the peach schnapps that you left in my fridge. And he talks about how he couldn't stop crying and he was scaring all of the animals at work. And so then he went on their honeymoon without her. And, like, I like what he says to her. Like, it's very sweet that he says, like, with you, it took a little longer. And she apologizes. Because I think that now that her and Mutt have broken up, like, she understands how deeply she hurt Ted. And not for nothing, I agree with you, Stuart, that she does handle this with much more grace than I would have expected.
I was at the barn party. Did you see me in the background?
You were there. You were hanging out.
Yeah, I was helping her out. I was like, go talk to Ted.
You're necking someone in the background.
I've met
you've necked?
I've met Annie Murphy.
You have?
Really?
Yeah, at a New Year's Eve. We were at a concert venue and she was there. I said hello.
Everyone in Canada knows each other.
I didn't hang out with her. I said, like, hello, nice to meet you. I love Schitt's Creek. Okay, bye.
What did she say? Did she say thanks? Did she do the hand thing? What did she do?
She said thanks. She's actually taller than I thought she was going to be. But
how tall is she?
I mean, she's not super tall, but I just thought, I feel like Alexis, she gives, and she's always like hunched. She's like, just the
taller than I would have thought. She's 5'7".
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. But this conversation is very, very sweet. And I also think Alexis is, again, we've said this before, she's not used to losing the breakup, if you will. She's not used to being the one who's brokenhearted after things end. She's used to being the one that ends things. And so this is a lot for her. And I love that she leans on Ted in this moment. And I love what Ted says to her. I just think, like, they're both being very mature and it's very cute and I love it.
Okay, can I say, I think this is an episode that is a pretty exceptional Johnny episode. And I talked about how I love that they still managed to like write in what I consider to be his flaws in this episode. Even Moira has the moment where she's still like, she is playing along with like making sure that they think she's still rich. I think this is an exceptionally well written scene that acknowledges both like what you want out of a sitcom, which is that Alexis is dealing with a breakup. She shows up at the party. There's a very tropey element to this too. And I think this is still a very flawed character. She does go to her ex and is like, basically like, how did you get over our breakup to help me get through the breakup that I'm going through? Like, that is like not probably what you should do in a sitcom. It's totally fine to do that because this is like the juice of what we want. It's like this moment of like Alexis probably doing something she shouldn't do to do it and get a moment that is very sweet. And I do think this moment is adorable. I love Ted. I think Ted's an exceptional character in the show. There's some good writing in here too, where he's like, you know, you just got to get through it. And he jokes. It's like, I'm my fear of heights. Actually, no, like with you, it took longer. He offers to dance with her. It's very, very sweet. I love this combo. But I do think like, if I was to tell Alexis, who should you go to for advice to try and get the breakup?
Not your ex-boyfriend.
Maybe not your ex who you broke up with. But
is there any...
Who cares?
Beyond it being a sitcom, I also... Stuart, I read this as, like, Alexis thinks that Ted is doing great. Like, he looks great. He has a motorcycle. He, like, went on this great vacation. Maybe she's honestly not even aware of, like, how... brokenhearted and ruined and wrecked.
Alexis is unaware.
That's what I'm saying.
There's a moment earlier where he walks up and he's, I thought you were going to ask to leave early. And she goes, I've been thinking that every single day.
The things that you think but actually shouldn't say to your boss.
It's so typically Alexis, isn't it? It's that she looks at the surface level of things and that she is kind of quite vapid in that kind of sense. And to have Ted just be honest about that whole situation is really useful for her, because I think that without it, she would still continue with this whole mindset of like, oh, he got over it really easy. And these things are kind of like, it's almost like the disposability of a relationship almost is that, oh, okay, well, people will get over it kind of thing. And she feels what Ted is feeling and they can kind of bond over it. Again, probably not the best thing to talk about like with your ex or your now employer, but I thought the pair of them kind of navigated it quite well. And it was a great way of, It's weird because I think in a way this drew a bit of a line under their whole thing, but then also I'm there kind of wanting to like go to the script with big arrows pointing back up, because I'm like, oh, that was really lovely. Maybe they could give it another go. I'm back on the Alexis and Ted train.
He doesn't have to be extremely honest with her in this moment and be like, actually, I was devastated. Like, he doesn't owe her like, and he's being pretty truthful, but it's the truthfulness that like works and gets through to Alexis where she can like hopefully learn from this. So it's really great. It's a really good scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Suggest at the end, just like staff dance. It's like making a thing of like, let's dance, but there's a boundary, let's can just have fun. And I was like, that was really good as well.
Yeah. The whole dance segment, right? Because then we get the roses and the shits also come into the barn, and we get like, you know, we have Jocelyn and Roland kind of approaching Mutt and kind of dancing with them. And then Johnny goes up to the kids and says, I don't care what snarky remarks you kids are going to make under your breath tonight. We are dancing as a family. And they all start dancing together, and it is the sweetest thing ever. And then Moira says, do you know your father and I hold great affection for the two of you? It may not always be obvious, but, and Johnny's like, just say it. Just say it already. Like, enough with like the, you know, she's saying it, but not saying it. And so she finally just says, we love you both very much. And then Alexis says, love you too. And then they all stare at David and he like rolls his eyes as he says it. I just feel like the way, first of all, it's like the sweetest scene of all time ever. And then secondly, the way this entire scene plays out is so true to every single character that Moira would try to talk around, that Johnny would say, Moira, just say it, that Alexis would be the first one to be like, love you too. And then David needs to be pried out of him a la Moira. It's so perfect. It's like chef's kiss. They all dance. Johnny raises the roof. It's like literally everything you want and need in a finale, or like a season finale of a show. And I love it so much. So sweet.
Yeah.
This line read for Moira here. Do you know your father and I hold great affection for you?
It's just wonderful. And it's not in just the family, but having a whole scene with the whole cast together having a lovely kind of like dancing. Yeah, okay. They're not actually having a party. They're working, they're filming and stuff. But it's nice to have, I think, that gathering of them all together where there is this almost jovial atmosphere. Like, I can only imagine, I mean, I hope at least that, but like off camera and stuff, they were having fun behind the set and stuff. And then, but back into what it was like when they arrive and you get Roland and Jocelyn going up to Mutt, and then Mutt and Jocelyn going off for a dance and stuff. It was just, it was just a good warm hug. And I can see why this was everyone's COVID watch, because this is just the happy vibe that I think everyone was craving at the time.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. Johnny dancing badly is amazing. And not only does he do it once, he has one move where he is raising the roof, which is a fantastic GIF. You need to save it. And then but he also has finger
the point.
Yes! The white guy pointing is everything. Mm-hmm. This is the white guy dance move all the time, is the pointing fingers. I love it so much. I love Moira's frog brooch. Just everything about this. And again, we get to see the whole cast. Like, again, what I imagine to be having a great time. Also, underrated Ted's dancing. He's doing the whole, like, move it over here, snap, move it over here, snap.
He's doing the Carlton almost, just very slowly. Yeah.
The slow Carlton.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
This song is so good. The Precious, Precious Love is just a tremendous song. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, and I think once again, I'm just going to like be like, where, why is this show so good? Like, you know, and talking about shit often, like, just you and I know have talked about this. It's like, it's almost harder when we end up watching something that's good because you have to like, you don't want to just be like, well, that was amazing. You know, you want to really break it down as opposed to a thing that's bad. It feels like, okay, I can very easily, you know, put my finger on why this was bad. This song here, this is the season finale of season two. And I do feel like comedies aren't like dramas in terms of like where other shows might, how you want to leave things in the season. This is so wholesome. It is like almost antithetical to what it feels like we're like, we watch a lot of the times, which is that we need to end on something that will like shock us and bring us back. I think especially I'm thinking about this a lot as, you know, watching a bunch of television and thinking about the binge model style of show, which is to try and get us to immediately turn on the next episode. And typically the way that is done is the opposite of this, which is something has gone terribly wrong or someone's in a situation of danger and panic. And again, I know this is a sitcom and so I'm, you know, but just my broader point here, which is that like this ending of this episode is so lovely that all I want to do is spend more time with these people. And that is like, I think so antithetical to the way a lot of shows do. And I do think there is like this trick that I think between like this, especially the first season of Ted Lasso and Abbott Elementary, I think recently I've been doing my binge of that. That show has so much heart to it that these are the type of shows that have, I think, sort of proven that, you know, in a way that this could feel so cheesy. This could feel like the family dancing in the barn to end an episode. Like that could feel like it's like, oh, it's too, and it's not. Mm-hmm. It's just perfect. And I think it is the piece of like, we know we are not watching the most, these perfect characters. All of them in this episode have shown ways in which they are flawed. And yet they're better and stronger when they're together and they're surrounded by the people in Schitt's Creek who look after them and they look after them, you know, they look after each other. And it's just so sweet that it makes me want to spend so much more time with them in a way that I feel like that's why it is so bingeable. This is the, I think season three is the season it finally started to get added to Netflix internationally and where it really took off. And I think having this in your, like, you know, again, it's not that this is the moment the show got good, because I don't think a show can survive this many episodes and not be good. So it is clear. I mean, you guys, you've already done the fold and the cheese stuff, right? Like this is like,
yeah,
this show is incredible, but there is something particular about this moment that I think a lot of the language has been used as like fall in love with these people and just want to spend so much time with them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's precious love.
Yeah. Well, speaking of people talking about falling in love with these characters, let's get into some feedback that we got. A lot of them echoing the same sentiments we've said, where Nick W says, you'll probably get this feedback a lot, but this episode is where I fell in love with the show. How can you not cheer when Johnny stands up for the town? Who doesn't get emotional when the family dances at the end? It's the wow, they did it moment of the series for me. Melissa says something similarly. This is the episode most cited as when the show truly becomes the show that everyone falls in love with. It's just really cooking with gas here on out, which I definitely agree with. Jared said, I 1000% agree. This is the moment where the show changed. And Todd says, a paradigm shifting finale with the Rose family taking a quantum leap forward in their growth journeys. I think that's totally correct in terms of like, we've not seen such immense growth so quickly within a matter of like 10 minutes from all these characters. Aaron says, this episode is just beautiful, such a turning point in the show where it truly gets its heart. You just want to shout yeah Johnny at the dinner table and then just love the shit out of all of them at the party. Love the show, love this episode. So and then we do have one more email that we need to read by Jen of Rose Bloom and Glickman, Bloomfield and Glickman. And Jen says, hello, good people of Talking Shit. A few weeks ago, I sent you a note suggesting that you two follow up your Schitt's Creek podcast with a Parks and Rec pod. Sounds like a few others are campaigning for that too. Yay. To which I will say,
yay, David. Yay.
Stuart sounded less than thrilled with the idea of more podcasting, which fair. Not trying to be a disgruntled pelican, but I'm putting on my best fashion pony and making my closing arguments. First, you should know I just love the idea of like putting on, I'm going to put on my fashion pony. Mm-hmm. First, you should know that you and Jess as co-host are, and that was a chef's kiss noise because that's what it told me to do.
The way you do it. Appeal to the ego. Thank you.
Yeah. I think listeners would be sad to never hear from you again. I know I would. Also, I love that this is being written and we are in season two of a 6-season show.
That's four more to go, people.
You're actually less than a third through because there's more episodes in the back half than the front half. So
yeah.
It's just incredible. Just spot check you here. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And second, you've talked about enjoying the West Wing, and I would say that if Schitt's Creek and the West Wing had a baby, it would be Parks and Rec. Hopefully that sweetens the deal. Objection sustained, Jen.
That's a bold claim.
Thank you so much, Jen, for writing in. I've seen a good bit of the West Wing. I haven't seen it in a while. Grace, have you West Winged?
It's so embarrassing that I have not.
You have not.
I am Canadian, Grace. So I think that I know. And the thing is I know I would love it. I feel like I have two major TV blind spots, and the West Wing fits in one of them. The
X-Files. What's the other one?
Twin Peaks is the other one that I think.
Oh, like, I haven't seen it either.
Same.
So what do you say to this, Stuart? What do you have to say back to Jen here?
I mean, it's a bold claim to say that Schitt's Creek and the West Wing's child would be Parks and Rec. Mm-hmm. I'm dubious because the quality of both Schitt's Creek and the West Wing are up there. And I don't even think we've got to the best of Schitt's Creek, which makes me think that it's living up to a level. But I mean, it's a compelling case. I'll say that.
I would say with Parks and Rec mirrors Schitt's Creek in that its best episodes are like kind of season three forward. And again, I am not saying seasons one and two of Parks and Rec are not good. They are great. I think season one gets off to a bit of a rough start, namely because it was trying to be The Office instead of kind of figuring out what it was. And so by season two, they really figure it out. And by season three, we're cooking with gas. So like, I could see the comparisons. It's hard for me to reconcile because Parks and Rec is such a funny show, and The West Wing, I'm not saying it's not funny, but that's not the genre I would slot it into. Is not comedy.
I would say West Wing has some of the best gags on TV of all time. Like when it's funny, it's freaking hilarious because it's like you have to combat like super serious drama with having moments of brevity. The same thing with like tragedy. It's not tragic if there's not comedy occasionally to like contrast against it and stuff. And West Wing does it really well. But yeah.
You're really going to convince Grace to watch because that's like her favorite thing ever. So
I know, in the back of my mind, doing that because I do.
You're evil. Can I tell you,
one of the problems is that the West Wing, and not that I can't figure out how to do this, but it's not readily available in Canada to stream. So that is one of the
problems.
Canadian
government is just like.
And every time I'm like, I should start this. I'm like, I get hung up on like, it's not, but I know I would love it. I know it's exactly, I listen to a ton of politics shows, like podcasts, like real life. So I think you'd be blending the two things I love. I will love it. I just like, it's a thing of like, when you're ready, you're going to try and bite off a chunk of a like multi-season show that you've never watched.
It's a behemoth to overcome seven seasons.
Of a podcast where I try to watch everything new that's on television. I will get to it. I promise. I'll get to it. But, you know. Mm-hmm. Listen, can I just say, you folks have 54 episodes of Schitt's Creek, which if you do every week of this podcast, you will be done in a year and 2 weeks. So what I would say to you, what are Stuart and Jessica to watch next? I think you have time to figure it out.
We hear you, Jen, and we do appreciate your plea. And I especially appreciate the way you wrote your plea. It tickled me.
Motion carried.
Yeah, motion carried.
Oh, you're going to watch the show. Oh, wow.
All right. Let's move on to our ratings here. Stuart, who is simply the best this episode?
There's an obvious answer, I think. Johnny is the kind of go-to. He has a stellar moment. Could be argued, perhaps, that it's a long time coming. Maybe it took too long. Mm-hmm. But I can't not give this man his flowers when they're due. I'm giving it to Johnny.
What type of flower are you going to give it?
Ooh, yeah. A rose.
All of them. Yeah, it's good roses. That makes more sense.
Give
them a rose. Whoosh, that went straight in my head.
I am also going to give Johnny my simply the best point. He earned it. Like, that speech is everything. And the dancing, cherry on top, you know? Raising the roof.
I'm gonna point my finger guns over and give my point to Johnny. It's really hard. Sometimes it's inevitable. It's like, sometimes I'm like, maybe there's a case to be made for this other person. I really don't know that there is in this episode. I think that there's a big gap between who is simply the best and who is simply the second best. So Johnny gets the point.
For our disgruntled pelican point, I would like to put a motion forward to the podcast. I want to argue that I want to give a disgruntled pelican point. I want to have there be joint recipients of my disgruntled pelican point. And it's because I hate both Bev and Don, and I think both of them should be punished. How do you feel about this, Stuart? Am I setting a bad precedent?
No, I'm totally open to this. I mean, as we have said with the rankings of the show, it's our show. We get to do whatever the hell we like. If you want to throw in two, throw in two. I think they've more than earned it. Absolutely.
I'm just going to put them under, I'm going to do Bev and Don Taylor in the spreadsheet. So they're under one column, but they're both just getting, they're just getting a nasty minus one from me, because don't be nasty. Don't be rude. Mm-hmm. Don't be dismissive of people's likes and dislikes. It's just rude and I can't stand them. What say you, Stuart?
They're up there. If that's now an option on the table, the Taylors are certainly prime candidates. I will also throw in Mutt for the well water that smells of fish, because that was tremendously bad. His girlfriend being called Tennessee. Sorry if there's anyone called Tennessee listening to this.
I really should give her the point to her parents on that one.
There's also in contention the waitress from the fine establishment in Elmdale for completely spoiling that Johnny had called up at the last minute. I'm sorry, there's a certain level of like confidence you need to have with your waitress that this wouldn't do that. Like, the amount of people that must phone up at the last minute having forgotten to make reservations, and you're just going to throw him under the bus like that?
She did.
Outrageous behavior. But weighing it all up, yeah. Fuck them, the Taylors, they're arseholes.
They're really the worst. Grace, what about you? Who do you want to...
So you're putting them collectively in the spreadsheet.
They're collectively as Bev and Don Taylor.
Yeah.
Wow, the story arc that they get over the next four seasons, Stuart, sorry to spoil it for you, but the Bev and Don storyline where, you know...
The redemption arc, yeah.
You know, it's tough that you put them together in the first time that they're here when they're in every other episode moving forward. Yeah. No, I'll give it to the Taylors. I think that there's like little things that other people do that I could... I mean, you know, we gave Johnny MVP. He did not forget his anniversary, but he did assume that the light lunch the diner would be enough.
But why is he responsible for being the one to do it? Like, if Moira wants something, maybe she should make a freaking dinner reservation. That's what I gotta say about that.
I kind of agree with that.
Don't have enough money, but yeah, no, it's a very gendered dynamic.
Yeah, I don't like it. I take offense to it.
I do agree with that, but also she is the star of the relationship. She is the one to go to the pod.
Star.
He's the behind the scenes guy.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we didn't get any Moira wigs this episode. We
Tremendous
got a Moira
hat.
Yeah, kind of pilgrim-esque, I would say, but wider brim. So that was fun. Of course, we still have to tier rate our episode. This is going to be the final episode of the season to tier rate. So let's take a look at what we got. We have, of course, Hot Shit, Full Bouquet, Love That Journey For Me, Ew, David, and Shit Out of Luck. Stuart, where would you like to put Happy Anniversary? What you
hot
got
shit.
Say?
If anyone argues against this, I'm going to be furious.
No, I think Grace, we have these conversations a lot where it's like, okay, usually my way of kind of ranking them is I take all three storylines or however many storylines there are and kind of talk about each one individually. How much did I like it, dislike it, whatever. Obviously, the David and Stevie one is, I would say, average. Not like bad, but just average.
I remember the line that I didn't like, which is he yells, did he invite you to his woodshop? And then he says, oh, that came out wrong. And I was like, that didn't sound super innuendo-y. I think this is an episode just where I'm going to try to get the thing right, which is the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Yes.
Is how I would describe this episode.
It's very much like the episode that has the wine bottle analogy. It's like, yes. Oh, but that moment is like transcendent in a way that even though every single part of the episode wasn't fantastic, the messaging behind it, the growth we see in the characters, I just don't see us putting this anywhere but Hot Shit. And so I guess at that point, we would just have to decide where it belongs in Hot Shit, because we have Finding David, the premiere, and Estate Sale, episode 4, also in Hot Shit. Grace, I'm not sure if you have seen these recently or remember them, but
I haven't watched them recently. Finding David is very, very good. I mean, this is, it's, you know, kind of, you know, the fact that this season starts and ends with such strong episodes, I think is emblematic of the quality of this show. I don't think I could tell you that it should or shouldn't be above or below any of these because I haven't watched them more recently enough, but this is the one for me that is like, I mean, this is the one I was like, you're like, do you want to talk about Schitt's Creek? I was like, yeah, I want to talk about the season 2 finale. It's like almost a shame to meet for me that it was so, it's kind of far into its run. It's basically a third of the way into its run. This is so good, but this is so memorable. So like my inkling was like, without having seen them, it's the best one, but you probably have better insight into whether it's actually better than Finding David or Estate Sale.
Stuart, where I land on it is I definitely think it's better than Estate Sale. Like, I think it belongs above Estate Sale. I would probably argue Finding David is better because I laugh more at Finding David, but that's what I value most. So, I mean, every person, you know, again, ranking arbitrary and reductive, blah, blah, blah. But
I'm wearing a shirt.
Does it say it?
Ranking is arbitrary and reductive. It's my arch.
Incredible. Ranking is
arbitrary. And it is, but we still have to do it. Stuart, what do you think? Because my argument would be slotted in the middle after Finding David.
I think that would be right to do. I think Finding David was one of the funniest episodes we've had in a long time. Like the whole shouting across the cornfield they're churning butter next to it. It's absurdly funny.
I slept with Mutt. It's gotten complicated.
I think this season has so many, because I think between Fold and the Cheese, David sitting in the field, and the barn dance are three of the like images that are like seared in my brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's leave it in Hot Shit then. That leaves us with 3 episodes in Hot Shit, which is incredible. Nothing even in Eve David or Shit Out of Luck. So a pretty good, pretty good season.
Yeah.
We'll see what next season holds. But we're not done talking about this season. We'll be back next week talking about season 2 as a whole. We'll talk about who won Simply the Best, who won Disgruntled Pelican, or lost, I guess, was Disgruntled Pelican. So that will all be next week, which is very exciting because then we'll be on to season 3. And I am jazzed. I can't wait to get to season 3. It's so good.
Yeah.
Grace, we appreciate you joining us. We appreciate your patience in waiting for this episode because it's been a long time coming. We know you have a ton going on. So why don't you tell us what you have going on?
Yeah, lots happening on RHAP. We know Scripted TV. First, Tastemakers each week with Taryn, where we will tell you what you should be watching. There's actually a ton of stuff out right now. And so I actually think it is worth trying to figure out what to watch and what to skip. A lot of new shows out recently. And then full recaps for Industry, Jess Jamie for season 3, episode 3. And then Emily and Josh returned for season 4, episode 4, which was a tremendously stressful, maybe the opposite of Schitt's Creek.
Yes, maybe. It really was.
Like, if you want a heartwarming show, watch Schitt's Creek. If you want to be stress-ridden, watch the last episode of Industry. It was very good. And then Tara and I are covering Rings of Power, which dropped 3 episodes all at once for season 2. I thought they were tremendous. I thought they were very fun. There's some nits to pick, but overall, pretty good. I'm going to be chatting about it each week. I'll actually be a little bit away because I'm going to the Toronto National Film Festival. I try to watch 40-ish movies, so... but I'm on social media at @HiFromGrace. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Incredible.
That's my life.
Grace, you mentioned it earlier, but I did guest recently on the Crying Laughing podcast talking about the upcoming alleged crossover between Abbott Elementary and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So that was a ton of fun. I basically handpicked five, actually six with extra credit, episodes of Abbott Elementary for them to check out. And then Amanda hand selected five, but also a ton more because she couldn't help herself. It's Always Sunny episodes that we're going to check out. So that's kind of a little mini series, if you will. So definitely go check that out because it was a ton of fun. And if you like sitcoms, I mean, which assuming you do because you're listening to this podcast, then go listen to that. Stuart, anything else you want to plug besides obviously everyone follow us at Talking Shit? Duh. Just do it. Come on. Just do it. Come on.
Auto download. This is something I gave to the Crying Laughing podcast, a little tips. But if you don't have your Talking Shit episode on auto download, you should go into your settings and change that. You can do it so that when you only do it when you're attached to Wi-Fi. Then it'll automatically down the episode. So say you go out in the morning for your walk like I do. I walk my dog. Oh, my gosh. The episode is already downloaded for me. And it's great.
It's already in your queue. Auto, it's so easy. Yeah.
So auto download is the tip I've been giving my friends of the pod.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Grace.
Well, is that just hit us up with the feedback. We love hearing from, like, everyone. The amount of, like, feedback we've had for this episode has been lovely. And also the ratings. Hold us to it. We'll read out them all, no matter what they say.
I'll do
test
it.
Test that luck. We'll do it.
test your luck because I'll do it. You don't know what I will and won't do. Yeah, definitely go do that. So thank you so much. Thank you again, Grace, for joining us. And we will be back next week with our season 2 wrap up. Until then, everyone, warmest regards.
And best wishes.
Every day when you log into ChumbaCasino.com, the ultimate online social casino, you get a free daily bonus. Imagine if you got daily bonuses in other parts of your life.
I chose French fries over loaded French fries.
I asked Stuart from accounting about his weekend, even though I don't care.
I updated my operating system without having to call tech support.
Collect your free daily bonus at ChumbaCasino.com now. And live the Chumba life.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.